This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released February 12th, 2024. Episode 658. Uncle Al's Eating Garbage Again.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
And now, editor extraordinaire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Our editor, our longtime editor retired, Suzanne, was wonderful.
Yes. Thank you.
We wish her a happy retirement. And we're on the lookout for a new editor we were just talking about. So if people have suggestions, we'd gladly take them. Otherwise, we'll slowly start a search. And if the edits stink in the meantime, that's because you have yours truly is a stinky editor. So,
well, speaking of which, somebody on the somebody added to the Reddit that our volume is a bit low.
Yeah,
on our mix on our final edit. I think
that was the last time I edited it. It was like a last minute thing.
Right.
Yes, maybe it's the same person who told me about it too. I think it was kind of low podcast MP3 volume. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it was one specific episode, was it?
I think that one was probably really called it out for people, but generally.
Right. Okay. Generally I think we haven't had any other complaints.
I'll try and do a side by side with other podcasts too.
Well,
Dave and I don't listen, so how the hell would we know?
Well, that's the thing with videos. Videos, like, there's a normalization level. Yeah. And I actually, here it is. I've got it right now. I'm actually,
there's a broadcaster standard, right?
Yeah. Here it is. So we also, if you don't know, we publish these episodes on the YouTubes as well. We have a YouTube. What have we got? 4,500 subscribers.
There you go. Not too shabby for
YouTube. Not too shabby at all. Yeah. So I'm listening to the previous episodes, 657, and our content loudness, it's called, is -6.2 dB.
The last one was me.
Oh, okay. So that was your edit, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me.
But
go
I put that
to...
through the levelator too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. We're still using that ancient tool from like 12 years ago.
I have it sequestered as a dot, as an executable in the Dropbox. And I actually just sent it to a friend who's starting a new podcast. So it's like one of those things where it's just like handed down. I'll probably, give it to my kids someday in like a USB stick. And they'll be like, what is this thing?
Right.
Do you think you'll hand someone a USB stick at some point in the future? And they'll be like, I don't know what that is. it's almost certainly possibly. Right, it's just like they'll have one of those like kids react videos where like they
kids react to old stuff
like an LP or something, like a vinyl piece of vinyl.
Well, the previous episodes with us, 656, which would have been properly edited, that was -6.9 dB. So content loudness in quote marks
is everybody gets a complimentary wax cleaning out of their ears,
Right.
That's the real power move, Dave, is insult the listeners.
Right. Absolutely.
It's not us.
Why
it's
not?
You. Yeah. And now that I've turned the volume up on this, I'm shouting in your ear.
Oh, boy. We'll turn it up.
I've heard it a couple of times. Yeah. So we'll turn it up. That's fine.
I still enjoy editing. We just mentioned this before the show. I still enjoy editing the interviews that I do because, well, often they're video as well. So I need to edit the video so the audio sort of like comes out for free for the podcast. Yeah. But even if it's not, I kind of enjoy sort of like editing. But when it's just the two of us doing our regular, episode together, it's like meh. It's just, episode number 10 million.
Dave will allow me to edit at that point.
Right. Well, you can edit by all means. I'd rather have someone else. Editing's
we'll just have AI do it at some point, Dave. Maybe that's what it really is.
Right. Well, you can get it to do all sorts of stuff these days. You can get it to Yeah, well, apparently there is. I heard about an AI tool recently. I can't remember the name of it, but it'll take out the ums and ahs. It'll take out the repeats.
It'll
normalize the volume. It'll do all sorts of stuff.
Descript was kind of like that too. Descript is a transcribing service. Yeah.
Yes, well, it can do so. I think it might be the new version of Descript, actually.
Okay, all right.
And if you peek... Right, you know how if you hit the mic or you speak really loudly into it like this. Okay,
I think people would have figured that out,
right,
Dave.
Yep. But if your mic level was wrong and you peaked, right, or your guest peaks or whatever, that's pretty unrecoverable. It's like it's
information theory thing actually.
Yeah, it's an information thing. The information's just gone, right? It's not sampled there. So tool does is it actually figures out what that word was or was going to be, and then it actually recreates your voice, the speaker's voice for that word. So it actually recreates just that one word.
And then it makes you say other things.
And
like,
it makes,
like
yeah,
I do when I edit the show,
things,
I make you say things that you actually don't know about.
Yeah, that
didn't
mean, yeah.
Know. Yeah.
Yep.
That is interesting. I actually, I just got, well, not just got, I've had for a while the DJI, the wireless mic. And the new trend in microphones.
Why don't you have the Rode one? Everyone has the Rode one, dude.
It's the same. The Rode does it as well. And so it's the 32-bit recording. I did it because I have that camera that I showed you that you're not a fan of. It came with that.
Oh, right. Okay. Right.
But the 32-bit recording I thought was interesting how there's a lot of the audio manufacturers are switching to that where they have 32-bit recording.
Yeah.
And so basically you peak, you under volume, you're too far away. You're going to have other problems with audio in that case. But you basically can dig stuff out of the dirt or you can knock it down if it is too high a volume. And it's like, it's like idiot control for people like me.
Right.
Yeah. But I was wondering what they do with that. Is it just like a higher?
Well, it's not foolproof because it depends how it's integrated with the microphone, right? So if it's like an independent 32-bit recorder, for example, you can still feed in the mic, and if you turn the input mic preamp gain up too high, you still it turned up to 11, that 32 bits still isn't going to save you. Right?
Yeah.
So you've got to have it still somewhere in the middle where it can get the peak excursions
Yeah, I mean, on this one, I don't actually have control of the preamp on this.
Right.
So that's the...
Yep.
I think that's the big
exactly.
thing. But,
well, they've already designed it. When it's integrated in that sort of product, they've already designed it for, to be in that sweet spot where you need to
be. I just wondered, are they doing two, like, 18 or 20-bit and then stitching them together? Like... So that you have different amplification levels.
Yes, they physically have two different amplification paths. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And then they stitch it.
Digitally. It together. Yep.
Yeah. Because I was just thinking, because the real thing I think about is you could get a 32-bit recording of maybe you find an ADC and you're just using a Sigma Delta and you're just oversampling the crap out of it, and that you could start to get that. But then you just the amount of noise that's going into that ADC is so if you were if you were just whisper quiet and you're trying to amplify that up, you're amplifying everything at that point, right?
Yeah, and the noise and
so
the
you
whole
need
works.
Multiple paths. This is basically
you definitely need
multi-ranging
paths.
DMM or something like that, right?
You don't get 32 bits of dynamic range on the one circuit. I'm sorry to tell
got
you
it. Yeah, got it. Okay, that's what I wanted to talk about. Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. It's all about the dynamic range and you're just not going to get it. So
okay. So
in theory, you could work it out, right? It out in signal level, you wouldn't need like a plus minus 1,000-volt power supply or something, or a plus minus 10,000-volt power supply or something ridiculous like that to actually get the excursion levels required for that 32-bit dynamic range, right? For a 1 millivolt input signal, from 1 millivolt. I'm not going to do the math in my head now, but
I'm sure
someone out there will do it and they'll correct us. But you would need a massively, you would need thousands of volts of a power supply or something to get 32-bit dynamic range. So you have to have different gain stages.
Different gain stages. Yep. And then you stitch it somehow. Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting.
So there you go.
Yeah, I've seen that in a couple products.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I did not seek this out, but I'm just like, if I need it,
nice.
I guess I could use it. Okay. But
very nice.
I have messed up a lot of audio recordings, so that's nice.
No, I'm still sticking with I've still got 16-bit or whatever my little, thing is. Okay. No, well, no. I switched over. I'm now the USB Rode mic, so it's whatever that's doing internally. I don't think it's 32-bit. So, yeah.
The one you're talking about, the thing you're on talking through right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is a wireless one. So it's like, it's basically, there's like localized recording, and then it passes over some wireless link to a receiver, and then that goes into the camera. But then it's only the localized recording that's 32-bit. So,
yeah.
I'm sure people don't give a crap about microphones. We talk about microphones more than people probably care about. Like, there's like four people right
they
now.
They do, but it's very interesting. It's interesting.
It is. I mean, I think the circuit parts are interesting.
I've done a 5-part microphone design series with Doug Ford.
It's
fascinating, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, a microphone is just a transducer, right? It's just changing
it's
one type of energy into another.
Yep. But it's it's absolutely fascinating. So, yeah, I've got the Rode Pod mic. So, I'm avoiding the external amplifier now. It's just USB out.
Just a built-in.
Although it does have that option. It does have analog out as well if I want it to. But, whatever. Anyway, does the job. I still need to do that tour of the Rode factory. God damn it, I'll do it this year.
Get on it, man.
Get on it.
Put it on your calendar.
Yeah, because they're just here in Sydney, So, I should do it. Speaking of companies, I've been dealing with, I now have a pool, if you've seen my pool videos on my second channel.
I have seen them slide by my feed, and I'm like, oh, look.
Right, and goes, oh, yeah.
Right, not watching that one either.
Right.
Time lapse of a pool robot.
So I am now dominating the pool robot market pool robot videos. So I got this Matty Mac, which is an Australian brand, pool robot, right? Like really top of the line, quite expensive, pool robot. And it's supposed to have autonomous nav, and it maps out your pool, and it totally cleans your pool, right? And it wasn't going up the walls properly, right? It's supposed to actually climb the walls. So it's got an impeller on the top of it, which turns on, and then it can put more downward force on the traction wheels, and then that's how it's
like
able
a Formula
to climb
One
up.
Car.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, exactly. Right, and so that's how it's able to climb up the walls, and it was really weird. Like, it was going up the high walls perfectly, and then it wasn't going up the shorter walls, and then it would not go up the tall walls again, and it was kind of like random. So I contacted the company. They're in Sydney, actually. And they watched my videos and everything, and they wanted the data back out of my robot. So they actually got my, so I sent the robot back. They desperately wanted it back to pull out the data and figure it, because they didn't know. Well, they had a few theories what was going on. And I think there might be like firmware, buggy firmware issues or something like that.
Did you ask to see the data?
After it turns left. If it turns left before it does this, then it can't go up the wall. So the gyroscopic data, so it's a combination of the gyroscopic data and the mapping was causing it to go.
I'm going to go a little conspiracy theorist here.
Yeah.
They just wanted you to stop making videos with that specific robot. And they're like, we'll send you another one.
Right. Well,
I'm just wondering,
does
a pool robot
the same
actually...
Thing. New one does the same thing.
Right. Does it actually record data, though?
Yes,
right?
Yes. I actually had a conference call with them, right? I had a conference call with one of their head technical people.
Sure.
And he said, it record. They log everything. They log motor torque, right? So the torque of all the motors in it. So they know impeller force.
What's their cache? Like, how many days of data is
that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe for the last run or something.
Did you break it apart?
No, I haven't torn it down because I didn't want to. And he said that's pretty good idea because it's got, you'd have to re-grease the O-ring seals and you'd have to, because this is designed to go underwater, right? So it's not something that you just want to take apart and slap back together.
Sacrificial unit, Dave. Come on.
Willy
it's
nilly.
A business expense.
Well,
you could have your pool clean as a business expense now because you're taking it apart.
Bloody expensive.
I know. Hey, you know what? The progress costs money,
Yep.
I'm just curious if it's a... embedded or like more Linuxy, like probably embedded, right?
Well, I'm sure. Well, maybe they'll send me some boards or something. I actually offered to go there and shoot. They said, "Oh yeah, we got hundreds of balls just laying around the lab and, you know, sort of like in various states. So maybe they can send
them. Yeah, nothing works here.
Yeah. Right. No, but they've been working on this for 5 years. They've been working on perfecting the design of this autonomous robot for 5 years, and they reckon it's the best. They think it's the best on the market. But they're so keen to find and use my pool as a test bed because they said it's a perfect shape and everything, perfect circumstances. So they want
to
use me
to
do, try out. So they extracted all the data out. Anyway, why? You're doubting them?
They're playing. You're doubting their sincerity? They're just looking for a promo, you know?
You think?
I don't know. I don't care.
Well, currently, if you search their brand on YouTube, it's just these wonky robot videos. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Anyway, it's absolutely fascinating. So they're, you know, yep.
Yeah.
So companies are
very... up on it. I think that's a great idea.
They sent me we swapped the robot, and they sent me one with new firmware, and it doesn't seem to make that much difference yet, but they're going to work on the firmware, and once they
do, actually
we'll
swim in this pool,
you just
film it.
Do I swim in it? Well, it's actually no video of me swimming in it.
I'm okay not seeing you swim. I'm just saying. Are you actually enjoying the pool? It seems like it's just a stressor.
Yes, it's excellent. Yes,
it actually matches up really well with my internal dialogue about it, owning a pool, which is you just spend all your time cleaning it and you never actually get to use it.
Yep.
You know. My wife had a pool growing up, and she just talks about how much she had to skim the top of it. I'm just like, all right, well, you know, I didn't have that.
Well, currently it's pretty low maintenance, and that's why we got the pool robot, because everyone says that the pool robots are less work than their, you know, manual, creepy, crawly, hosey things. And anyway.
I remember I was very confused about pool robots growing up because we had a family friend who had a pool, and of course we always wanted to go over there.
Yeah.
But they named their pool robot after like one of their uncles. So the pool robot was named Uncle Al.
Uncle Al.
And I just remember they'd be like, yeah, Uncle Al's in the pool just like eating garbage again. What? Yeah, he just eats up all the leaves off the bottom of the pool.
Context,
like, what? What? Yeah, it was very confusing for a young Chris.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're quite cool because, again, I come from the underwater industry.
Yeah, sure.
Know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah,
it's good. It's right up my alley.
Let's get a little update here. Did you end up getting the pick and place?
No, I haven't. Well, I haven't said no yet, but I haven't said yes yet. It's kind of
say yes. Say yes.
You want me to say yes? You want me to say yes?
I told you to say yes. Three episodes ago. Four episodes. Five
I'm
episodes
busy.
Ago.
I need to like.
You're
I need
busy.
To rent a
You're
truck
filming
and
your pool. You're filming your pool. Set it up on a tripod. Put it on time lapse and walk away, Dave. You don't need to be there.
That's what I did with the pool. It takes me like a minute.
Yeah, and then you post it.
Takes like a minute
to
set up my time lapse camera, and then I put the robot in.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Go get a pick and place for my edification. So I can make fun of you for thinking that you want to have. Yeah, I do actually. I want you to feel that pain, but I want you to like film it. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh God. What's the? I got to hire a car. I hire a van. I've got to drive to Canberra. I probably got to hire one of those forklifty jack trolleys or something as
No, you could probably just hire someone to pick it up and bring it to you. Come on. There's delivery services.
Yeah,
business expense.
Are.
Come on, Dave.
Probably are. Yeah.
Yeah. Just do that.
All right. I'll investigate. I'll investigate
good.
Yeah, because that would be a total no-brainer, right? Like if I could pay someone to go.
If you could pay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then like you don't
to
get hurt.
Pick it up and deliver it. Then yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Although I think I measured my door and everything, right? Mm-hmm. I think, well, I would have to tip the thing sideways to get it through the door.
You could pay the people that move it to move it in for you.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
true.
There's professional movers. That's what they do. They're amazing. I love watching. Like they are just like the good ones are
so
good.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. So good. And I am not that.
and they're usually huge and strong, and they're, you know,
not always though. Like usually they just know about like leverage and like
leverage,
you know, using
and
the, right,
the best way to do things.
The right
equipment
and yeah.
Yep.
But
but I've seen movers just pick shit up like it's like nothing.
Oh man, you know? I have a video from my doorbell camera of this guy delivered a crib for my son, you know, like
yeah,
and it was like It was a very, I had to have my brother-in-law help me move this box. And this guy literally is just like one person just carrying it off the back of the FedEx truck and dropping it on my porch and like, and thumping it on my porch. Really? Wow. Should pay that guy more, you know?
Dang.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah, they know what they're doing. Of, all right, I'll look into it.
Speaking of doorbell cameras, last episode, Keith Brzezinski was on the show. We talked about ESP Home, but I have a functional home assistant. I am joining the smart home, Dave, only 15 years later. Yeah. It is so easy to get this stuff going. Like, I was so incredibly surprised how easy it was.
What is the system?
So it's Home Assistant is the, so it's home basically.
Right. So that's the brand, is it?
That is the open source software that gets installed on a Raspberry Pi.
Oh, okay. Right.
It's all local, right? So that's, maybe you've never heard of it.
Yes, you don't
want
to go back to the cloud. God, no.
That's right. You can. Yes. You can integrate with like cloud services and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but you don't
but
have
no,
to,
don't.
Which is the
Don't.
The
Pro tip. Don't.
Yeah, right. I think you would like this system, honestly. And then like,
I have had a look at that at one point. Yeah.
Okay. It was incredible. I wish I would have done it sooner. Like, not because I don't need this stuff, right? It's just for fun right now. But it is so much easier than I thought it was going to be. Like, even still, like, it's, you know, it's been around for a while. So much easier. And then, so I think since I recorded with Keith on Sunday of this past week. So it's only like 5 days ago. Mm-hmm. But even just since then, maybe I was talking about it with Keith on the show, but I have a Zigbee dongle that plugs in. So it's basically just like it's a Silicon Labs EFR32 in there, basically. And there's firmware on there. And then because it's USB plugged into this Pi, the software and Home Assistant, it's called Zigbee Home Automation, is the ZHA, is what y'all often see. Basically, it just says, all right, well, I'm talking, you know, this high level software on the Pi is talking down through USB to the firmware. And then that's got a Zigbee radio on there, which is just 2.4 gigahertz. Mm-hmm. And I go into the menu and I just click on the Zigbee device. It's basically the dongle and says, hey, do you want to add a new device? And then like you literally just press a pair button and you're off to the races and you're done. And it's because it's reporting all these standardized capabilities, it just knows what it is and you give it a name and off you go.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It's great.
Have fun.
I will say.
Until it goes all obsolete and then, you know, it's not supported anymore.
It's open source. It's on my computer. Yeah, okay. It's local.
Yeah.
You don't need to update anything if you don't want to. You could just air gap it if you really wanted to.
All right.
So like that there is no obsolete.
So
you know?
What is this doing?
So
what's
in this case, that I have not 100% figured out yet. Okay, so I'll tell you all the sensors
use
I have
case.
Right now.
You're just dicking around, right?
No, I have a couple use cases right now. So like I'm still trying to figure out some of it. So like I have a smart switch, right? So that's a Zigbee switch, plugs into the wall.
Right.
And I can just actuate that off of right now it's controlling the lights behind me in my office, right? Nice. So basically I start a video, like literally not hard to do. I just wanted to have something that's very actionable and visible, right? So that's I could trigger that from Home Assistant. And then I ended up getting some, based on Keith's recommendations, I just got some off the shelf. These are window sensors. I'd actually been searching for a garage door sensor. I was like, they make garage door sensors, whatever. Yep. And then I searched on Amazon to see if there was like an off the shelf Zigbee one, and there wasn't, but it was just showing like these window, it's just like a magnet read switch kind of thing. And then I saw the best part was actually, I got the idea from the one of the product reviews on Amazon. The person took a photo and what he did is he took a hinge, like a metal hinge, like you would just have on a cabinet, and he stuck the magnet. He glued the magnet onto the bottom of the hinge, and then he put the detector right below it. Right. So, and it's just anywhere on your garage door. So then as your garage door goes up, gravity makes the hinge fall away from the other thing. And now it's showing as open. Right. And so like for $10 and a metal hinge, now I have a functional garage door detector that's like works perfectly. And I didn't have to like do anything. I like did like two screw holes and I'm done. It was like awesome. Okay, that's two things, right? Not saying that I would ever do this. But I could, in theory, then I could set up automations that are like, I like to set up an automation. You'd basically just say, okay, when the garage door is open, that's like your trigger. And then set up an automation,
and
select your light.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And it's like completely, it's very, very simple to do.
Yep.
I would not do that. That's not a very good automation from my perspective, but right. I'm still learning a lot of this stuff. So
Okay, kind of interesting. All right.
Yeah, I thought about like having like a recording mode in my office, you know, just have like have it so it's always very consistent. That's like one way I could do it. I have a one on my baby gate that's at the top of the stairs now. So like I can have automation at like 10 p.m. every night to make sure my daughter doesn't get out of bed and like be able to like walk down the stairs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of silly things, but like stuff I always skipped in the past. Like I literally would have skipped in the past. But now it's like $10 on Amazon for a thing and like like a minute of setup. That's the key thing for me. Yeah. Not even. So.
All right. Well, have fun.
Thanks. I'm going to talk about it more on here probably. Probably. We'll see.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Home automation. God, no.
Yeah.
Please don't do your light bulbs. Just use a plug switch.
Yeah, I don't understand that one.
I don't understand the, oh, you can RGB control your lights and you can dim that. Like, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to dim them, put a knob on your wall.
Yeah,
for God's sake.
I think the programmable knob, I'm guessing that probably would work. I would only want it to be like if you had a, you need to still have local control, like local physical control. That's the important thing to me.
Totally.
Maybe I'll try it. Yeah. That seems like a lot of work. This is right now I'm just gluing stuff on, you know, under the socket or under the wall or garage door or whatever. So like once we start doing anything more intense than that, I think that'll move me into another phase of home automation. And I'm not sure that's for me, but we'll see where it all goes. I have a, what was I to order? I had just ordered some temp sensors. They were like I said, they're just so cheap. That's what's really crazy about it. It's just like the abundance of cheap hardware is pretty crazy.
Right. Well, I had a problem with the wireless lights in my lab here, like because I've got, you know, lots of overhead lights and I need to turn them on in various combinations depending on where I am in the lab and what I'm shooting, right?
Oh,
stuff like that. So I had these wireless ones and they just gave me no end of problems. So I changed brands and the new brand gave me no end of bloody problems. They would reset, and then I actually did a video analyzing, let's see if I can find it, analyzing the it was the RF circuit in it that is crap. Wireless lights controller or something.
What is the protocol it's talking over?
Oh, it's just a like 433 megahertz or something RF analog RF thing, right?
Sure.
And these things, and then if you switch, like because I switch my lights off, right, when I leave and then I switch them back on, these wireless light sensors, when you actually switch the power, they're wireless power points, right? So they're just wireless power points, and you've got this remote control button, and you can turn these power points off and on. Because all the lights in my lab are actually PowerPoint based, so my entire roof is like wired with freaking power points. You know, it's nuts.
A light that plugs in. I see. So it just plugs into the PowerPoint.
So that's how they do these commercial offices here. Is that they install power points in the roof, and then you just plug the things into the
PowerPoint.
That's
kind of nice for like a replaceability.
Oh yeah, no, like, no, it's great. Nice. Yeah, so I could just plug in. I could just physically plug in a wireless thing, and then but when you turn the power on, they go into a programming mode for the first minute. Right. So if you press the button within the first minute, it screws up all the programming that you've done for your lights. And it does that every single time you walk into the bloody lab. It's ridiculous. So I end up, after getting two different brands, I went, screw this. And I put in a six-way power, a six-way light switch. So I've got six different light buttons and there's individual wiring going to the lights. It's just way easier. God, bloody wireless things.
Yeah.
Oh no, I still do have one of them. I still do have one wired up and for some reason. But yeah, they're a pain in the ass.
Yeah, so you basically have the smarts like in the light itself instead of like between the light
and the PowerPoint going to the light or the lights. I did actually originally have a wireless thing for the light itself, and then that
because then it would like maintain power to the, it would like be in a sleep mode. Yes. When it's off, but then probably some vampire power.
And then it would spin. God, it's just horrible. So no. So I installed a six-way power, like a switch, a six-way switch on the wall. So screw it.
Yeah.
So, just works way better. Okay. Yeah. I'm far happier. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes simpler is better in that way, you know, like...
No, totally. It's worth putting the effort in to make it simple, if you know what I mean. Like sometimes it's not easy to make it simple, right? Sometimes you've got to put in a lot of work to make it simple, right?
Sure.
The lights had to be individually wired and had to drop cables down to the six-way power point and everything, six-way light switch and everything else, right? But the final solution is great.
When you say a six-way, is that like a power strip? Is that what you're saying there?
No, like it's like a regular light switch, but it's got six individual light switches on it. So it's a gang of six.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay.
Switches. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
So I can turn any combination of lights off or on.
Got it. Yeah. So it's just individually controlled, and you just choose, and you're like switches one, two, and six, or
one, two, and six on, and that lights up a segment of my lab.
Got it. Yeah.
It's far easier. But it was a significant amount of effort to actually do all that. But it was worth it.
Sure. So. Yep.
Whereas the wireless thing was so much easier. Just plug in this wireless PowerPoint into the roof and,
fail. Speaking of simpler, I am headed that direction. You know, so I do a lot of high-powered microcontrollers for my day job, Goliath. And then I'm going the other direction now for... at home for funsies and following your path. I'm doing a CH32 V003 board.
Nice. Doing what?
Yeah, it's not really sure right now. So I did a breakout basically just to, I'm just proving out that I have the right footprint and, you know, all the, mostly just get some momentum too. So it's mostly just breaking out pins. I've got like two things hanging off the I2C bus that I assigned. So like a pin off for one of those cheapo, like 1-inch OLEDs. Excuse me. And then like a quick connector. I don't know if you ever looked at those, like the Quick and Stemma are the two Adafruit and SparkFun brands. Yeah. So like one of those connectors was just like a JST BB SM type of thing. And then the big one though, probably the most important thing on there that I'm trying is when CN Laura was on the show, he talked about his USB library. So it's the RV003 USB library,
right?
And that's the thing he talks about where it's, he fit it into the bootloader. Basically it's a low speed, like the lowest speed USB connection, the 1.5 megabit.
Yes, the old school one.
So there's actually no transceiver, it's just bit banging on the IO.
Okay, right. The actual micro is fast enough to bit bang the original USB protocol.
That's right. Nice. And it's pretty janky on my end too, because like so I was like, I don't really want to buy a 4-layer board, and I don't think people who are using this in this super low speed thing would want to either,
right?
And then when you look at like trying to run controlled, you really can't do controlled impedance from, you know, at 90 ohms on a 2-layer board at 1.6 millimeters, right? So like that part is pretty, it's pretty much just like, it's just, they're just ran some lines and just hoping for the best, and just the discontinuity there will be
you just
low enough
at those sort of speeds,
we'll
you don't really care. Like, yeah,
exactly,
really
exactly.
It'll work.
So it'll probably work. If not, it'll probably be my implementation. So no big deal though. Like, you know, I got the boards. My big thing was like, I wanted to do it while I'm still on parental leave and the lining up with the Chinese New Year, which started a couple days ago.
Just started, isn't it?
Like,
yeah.
I had to, thread that needle. So I managed to get it out in time, and I do have the boards in hand now. And so we'll see how it goes.
Cool bananas.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Have you done anything else with that part or no? I just saw your video.
I just saw Mike's Electric Stuff's latest video.
Right,
he's playing around with a standalone. They now have a standalone programmer. I'll probably... Yeah. Oh, well, no, I don't really need one because I don't... You only need these standalone programmers if you've got a production run and you want to quickly program them all. And it's just easier if it's standalone. You don't have to dick around hooking it up to the computer and everything else. You know, you can you can go over to your programming bench and just use it, you know, just power plug in and then...
Yeah, you can ship it to a manufacturer. Like he talks about in the video, like shipping it to a manufacturer is nice and easy. They have like some capabilities in there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's actually loaded up. I've actually got that for my meters, because my BM786 meter is actually firmware reprogrammable, not by the user, but I've got the factory programmer tool, and it's a standalone tool. So I've got the latest firmware programmed into that. So I don't need to hook up a computer if I want to program the latest firmware into unit for some reason. I just plug it in, press the button, boom. Yeah. You know,
yeah. And that's nice too, from like a, yes, you could get a program and send it to your CM and whatever, but you don't know what they're installing it on. So like, why not just ship them the whole damn thing? That's like,
yeah, ship
it
them
worked
the whole
when
thing.
I shipped it.
Yeah.
Does it work when you open it? If not, you're shipping it back to me. And then we're going to, just kind of like, that is the best way to, it's like a controlled experiment that you're just shipping the whole damn experiment.
That was a lot of my career was making test jigs, which we would ship to the manufacturers, you know, like we would ship to the contract manufacturer. Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
And you'd set them up and you'd train them and you'd have test procedures for using the thing. And, you know, this standalone WCH program is interesting. I don't know if you watched Mike's full video.
I did.
But I thought one of the interesting things was that it limits how many chips you can program. So it's limited to like 500 or 1,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
So the reason they do that is so that the manufacturer can't secretly manufacture 10,000 more units and sell them on the black market, right? Yeah. That's what it's for. So this Chinese, because the WCH controller.
You probably just have to do some man in the middle type of magic,
but you'd have to do, you know, you have
to
work
work
for it.
It's not easy.
It's not easy. You'd have to be smart enough to figure a workaround for it.
Totally.
And so it's interesting that the WCH, which is, you know, purely this is like a Chinese targeted, you know, micro, right, for the Chinese market. And they don't trust the other Chinese manufacturers, so they limit the programming tool to,
good idea. I mean,
it's a sensible idea, because, you know, everyone's heard the horror stories about, I sent my product to the Chinese manufacturer and they made and sold them on the black market, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, that's the
not the stuff I make. I don't worry about that.
Yep. No, I don't.
Oh, the other thing I put on my board is a header for one of those tiny NRF24 breakouts.
Right.
Have you seen those things? You know, those little 8-pin, like 2.4 gigahertz open protocol things?
Oh, I'm trying to picture it now.
The boards basically look like, you probably have. Like, I always think about them because they always have like the 8 megahertz metal can on them, like the little oscillator.
Right.
And then there's the NRF24 is the main chipset, and then there's like a 2.4 gigahertz inverted F antenna. So you would see that. Actually, I can just send you a Amazon link. Yeah, you can buy like a 10 pack on Amazon for like $8. which is great because, you know, like if you need them for and they're just super cheap. I didn't realize why they were so cheap, because like Nordic is still making these things, right? Nordic Semiconductor is doing a lot of much more complicated products out there, but they are also selling these chips into the, you know, in the low cost market to have like, you know, point to point. It's basically point to point wiring. Oh man, my Amazon's not showing up. Did I order it this year? I ordered it last year. Let's see. But what I figured out is that there is a chip maker that basically emulated the entire chipset, and there is a low-cost replacement of it. All right, I find the link finally.
Yeah.
Let me send this to Dave. There it is. I'll send it in StreamYard, Dave.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's actually a 16 megahertz crystal. I got that wrong. So there's really not much to it.
I've seen this. And they plug into a breadboard or whatever, or they play, into a breadboard really, but.
You've got them into a lot of different things.
They've got an 0.1 inch header.
What I always think about is one of the projects that I've seen it implemented on, it was Sammy Kamkar, who we've had on the show before. He did a Hackaday talk about some like illuminated balloons, where he basically did like, I think it might have been a Burning Man project, but it was like at night, then you have like a mesh, like an ad hoc mesh of these different balloons that could talk to each other.
Got it.
You can color synchronize.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Maybe it wasn't Burning Man, but you know, some kind of art project like that. So I'll link those two things in his show.
Is that how those drone shows work? I'm not sure. I don't know about
those drone shows.
Are they pre-programmed on the ground, or do they talk to each other in the air and then... synchronizing the air.
I always figured they must talk back to the station because they need to be like reference locked, right? You need some like three-dimensional reference lock in order to make those crazy shapes they do. So I kind of always figured they were just on individual channels talking back to a base station on the ground.
Right.
Or multiple base stations when you think about it. Right?
I can imagine because you could pre-program them all on the ground and then synchronize start them on the ground. And then they wouldn't drift enough during like a 10-minute show or something that it would be a problem.
Yeah, but then they have to have like dead reckoning of like where each individual one is, and that sounds really expensive. I figured it'd be
but you could have like multiple beacons. Pre-program all that. You could pre-program the whole lot.
Yeah, I guess you could. Yeah, I guess I always see them like on football fields and stuff like that. And I guess if you had like fixed references on the field, then they would be able to triangulate where they are in three-dimensional space from that. Basically, it's like inverse GPS, where each drone is the GPS satellite sort of thing. No, I guess that wouldn't be. No, it would be the receiver.
I think they're all pre-programmed on the ground. That is my best guess.
It's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there's drone shows. I've never really looked into it, but
they've gotten really insane. Like, I mean, I know that like they were. Yep. They've been around a long time now, but it's crazy.
We used to have this issue when we were doing the ocean bottom data recorders, right? Because these were completely autonomous. They couldn't talk to each other, right? Yet we would lay them on the ocean floor in a grid pattern, right? Okay. So either you could drop a remote controlled rover would go down and drop these things in a grid pattern on the ocean floor, right? But we not absolutely.
You wouldn't have you wouldn't. There wouldn't be like a perfect locationing kind of thing, right?
Oh no. But you would know the distance between each one, and so you could figure out the maths later. You know, it goes into the supercomputer to find your oil and whatnot, right?
Yeah, got it.
So so they would lay there, but we would synchronize them on the back of the boat. Right, so that we would synchronize the time, but these were autonomous data loggers, and they'd go for like weeks, right? So you would place them on the ocean floor, and they go for weeks, and then they drift apart in time. So even though they had really good oscillators on them, they would drift. And of course, then you had to skew correct. So when you get them back off, you have to then plug each one into the unit, and then you would see how much each one had actually drifted, and then you could skew correct.
Oh, because you'd have a single point of reference.
You would have a single point of reference, which is the atomic clock on the back of the boat, and you would know, right?
Yep.
And so you would know after a week how much these things had drifted, and then you could skew correct all the data. So you had to skew correct.
Yeah, but what if the bottom of the ocean is traveling at some fractional speed of C? Then you wouldn't,
we'd have to take relativity into account.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Also, probably there'd be some other problems about locality.
Well, in theory, a couple hundred meters down, they run, the clocks do run slower than they do on the boat. So, you know.
Wait, really? Because of gravity?
They do. Dude.
Sorry, help me out here, Dave. Yeah. I'm underslept.
It's the famous flying clock experiment that HP did back in the 50s or something. I've actually got a video looking at one of the original cesium beam atomic clocks that was used in that famous flying clock experiment, where they proved that time passes differently if you're on the ground or if you're up in the air, right? This is going back to the early days of Einstein, right?
When it came up here. But it's because of relativity or because of what?
Yes.
It's not just distance.
It's because of relativity. You're traveling faster. The Earth is spinning, right? So you're traveling at a faster speed if you're up at a different height. So if you're standing
because of gravity pulling you out through an orbit at a faster speed, if you're like geolocked.
Yeah, you're physically traveling faster than the person down at the bottom of the mountain. And you can measure this. You can measure this in the time difference. If you've got a good enough atomic clock, you can actually measure the difference. So what HP did with their flying clock experiment is nobody had actually proved this, but based on Einstein's thing, the clocks would run slower or faster, I think, if they're higher up. I've probably got that back to front. Anyway, faster or slower. They would run at different speeds whether or not they're higher. So what they did is they put two atomic clocks. Well, they had multiple ones. They kept some on. So they synchronized them all, put some on the ground, took some up in a 747, and then they actually got the data up there and brought them back down. And they were actually different. The clocks, there was a skew difference in the clocks because the time actually ran slower or faster the higher they were up.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a real thing.
This is why I don't hang out with the atomic clock crowd, because I don't like
that. Right. It's basic relativity. The faster you travel, you, in theory, go at a different speed. So technically, if you live at the top of the mountain,
fly the plane slower, you know?
I think somebody did
That was a joke.
Right. Fly the plane slower. Somebody did actually calculate, I think, once. I read it somewhere, that a pilot lives X amount longer than somebody who's not, because
except for all the heavy drinking,
and all the radiation, right?
That's right. Yeah, and that's true.
And the radiation they're getting.
Yeah,
from
call back to the. I always think of that XKCD comic, where XKCD shows like the relative radiation doses, and it's crazy. Like, you know, like just being up higher and less coverage from atmosphere,
Here you go. I will send you the video from 10 years ago where I looked at the HP atomic clock that was used in the famous flying clock experiment. There you go.
Cool.
And it's kind of a mini teardown of it as well. So there you go.
There you go, son. Go educate yourself.
But anyway, getting back to the ocean bottom stuff, it wasn't that much of a difference over several weeks at several hundred meters height difference between the ocean floor and the boats. So it wasn't, you know. And,
gotcha.
And well, it didn't really matter anyway because they were all down the bottom. They were all at the same level, essentially. So they were all on the ocean floor together. So there was no height difference. But you know,
so what was the drift caused from? Just from...
Oh, a drift caused from the clock, because we couldn't put an atomic clock inside each one because, power consumption, right? These things had to be battery powered because autonomous things on the bottom. So, so we had to have DTCXOs, digitally temperature controlled crystal oscillators. We got those specially manufactured in Japan, and they weren't good enough. Sorry?
The best stuff comes from there. So.
Yes. So, yep. And they were all hand selected. I can remember hand carrying these oscillators to Singapore, and I tried to get through the Singapore airport with these things in. I'm sure I've told this story before. Surely,
I'm sure you have.
These hand selected. Right, I had to hand test and hand select all the best oscillators, and then I had to go and install them personally in Singapore. And I went through the airport, and they stopped me, and you know, all my stuff went through the X-rays, and so I had to hand carry these on the plane because you know we couldn't risk them being subjected to any shocks or vibrations. So they're all in there with shock absorber pad in and everything. And I went through the X-ray machine and they went, what are these unusual things? And they called over the armed guards with automatic weapons over to me because they thought, you know, like this is like something was, these look really weird.
He's a spy.
These look weird.
There definitely are like, you know, people transporting microchips in like Bond movies. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. And so these looked really weird to them. So I had to explain to them.
You know the big difference,
Dave? What are these used for? What?
You know the big difference? What? In the Bond movies, they're not nerds.
Right. Oh, boy. So I had to explain to them what these did. They're clocks. And I had to, you know, tick-tock, and they, like, get in all nervous, like they're bombs.
Now I remember. You definitely told this story on the show before, because I remember that part, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I did make it out of Singapore Singapore Airport alive, so, yep, it's all good. So anyway, there you
only
go.
Live twice.
Fun stuff, yes.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of research on that, because I've told you before that if you shock or if you vibrate a crystal oscillator, it resets its long-term drift characteristics.
Mm.
And I've done a lot of research into that. So a lot of long-term research.
Yeah. I've done that too. You know, like when the alarm clock won't go off and hit the side of it. Right. And that resets it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And I've told you about 2G tip over, haven't I?
Yes, you have. Yes.
Yes. If you hold your watch upside down, it actually changes its time.
Yes.
Yeah. Gravity. Gravity's a bitch.
Gravity. Gravity's a thing. Yeah.
And it affects your oscillator. So, yep. And I've done
and
a video
And yet you weren't that interested when I talked about a garage door with gravity impacting a sensor opening. Come on, man. Same thing. Gravity.
Yeah, but it's a garage door opener. It's a garage door. They it's go true. Up, they go down. Yeah.
It's true.
Seen it.
If you're doing it right. Yep.
Right. Oh, boy. Anyway, very fascinating stuff. So where the hell, how did we get on that tangent?
Time drift of... drone shows because of
oh,
this.
Oh, drone shows. That's right.
NRF 24
how do we get
thing.
Onto drone shows?
NRF 24, I was mentioning that right. I put onto my board. So I'm going to try and get the two boards talking. There's a, the only reason I'm doing that, honestly, is because there's in the CH32V003 fun library that CN Lore came on to talk about, there's a receive and a send program on there. And I was like, oh, look, free code.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So free code.
That is
yeah.
the entirity of my thinking so far on that side of things. Everything else is just.
Well,
I
might have to look into free code because I definitely don't want to write it myself for a project that I'm working on. I've kind of still tossing up between whether to go for a custom 7-segment display or go for a full graphic LCD display. And if I go for the full graphic display, then I have to do my own fonts, of course, you know, because
that's,
you have to.
That's
like,
non-trivial, yeah. That's
yeah,
right.
No. So I don't want to do that from scratch. So surely somebody's totally. Written and I want like a big large font. So maybe I'd have to choose a regular font, then I'd have to scale it somehow or something like that. Maybe the code. So I've got
it's
to find some code
like,
that scales it.
I have told people that before too, like when they're asking like, oh, like what chipset should I use or what, you know, whatever. And it's like really, I think, being able to see the entire ecosystem, including the software, that actually is a bigger deal, I think, because, you know,
that's
the chip
why a lot of
good.
People will stick with the Arduino and stuff like that, because there's so much code out there to do so much different stuff that it's almost worth compromising on your hardware just to make your software life easier.
Yeah, and I mean, that it's basically like an interactive activity layer, right? I mean, like that's interoperability layer, I guess is a better way to say that. That's nice. Yeah, that's like a lot of the things that I like in like Zephyr, like you get a lot of free stuff there too. Not everything. There's no like, I don't think there's any libraries for code or for fonts. But yeah, I mean like finding, you know, I think that's why searching on projects as well is also really important. Like being able to see other people doing this sort of thing just as a proof point of like it has been done. Maybe it's not the easiest implementation, but seeing someone else do it is often a great starting place for that sort of thing. So. How big of an LCD? Like, I think that's the other thing with LCDs, too. There's so many variations.
Well, it's like maybe 3.5 to 4 inches diagonal.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite a large LCD, right? So it's you know, and because I want it to have like a big font. So it's like an LCD, like 100 millimeters by 50 millimeters or something like that, you know? So it's quite, it's quite sizable. And I want it to have a big font so that you can see it from across the lab. Right. I want to, you know, so you can just glance. This is a product you designed that's designed for you to glance over to and see where it's at. And you don't, you know, and you don't want to have to walk up to it and squint at some tiny little LCD. Right. You want to be able to see from, you know, half a mile.
You
away.
Should make it like that AI pin that projects onto your hand.
Oh,
so you
that projects
project
onto your bloody
wall.
Hand. Oh, God, that was the most boring. Did we talk about that? That was the most.
We didn't. We yeah, it's
boring.
Really
boring. Oh, my God. It was the two founders. And they personally did the promo video. Like, you know, it's quite a novel concept, quite a novel product. They were ex-Google Labs or something, were they? Or where'd they come from?
So they were a bunch of smarty pants. I think we just leave it at that.
Yeah, they were a bunch of smarty pants from some other smarty pants company. Yeah. And they spun off into...
Smarty Pants Inc.
To do this... What is it called? The AI... What's its name?
I don't remember. I think the last I heard about it, they've already fired a couple people in the company.
Oh, really?
They raised all this humane. Yes, humane.
Humane, right. Yes, the humane pin or whatever. And it's an AI pin that projects onto you. Like you actually
hand.
Wear
That's
it on your shirt and then it actually projects onto your hand. And
yeah,
you can
except
do
it doesn't look like... Doesn't look like what they're showing here. They're showing like it like being this perfect, you know, projection on your hand, and like you actually watch the video.
It's
like
it's
a tough thing to do to like do that kind of like late. Yeah. And it's like, you know.
So is that actually released? Can you buy it?
You can order it. I don't know if you can. I don't know.
Right, because that was ages ago when that made all the hype and everyone was wowing about it. And then I watched the promo video and they had the two founders, this guy and this girl, like, and they were the most boring presenters ever. I mean, like, hats off to them. It was a really good demo and it was all shot in a single take, I think. From memory, I think it was, you know, I was very impressed by the production value of what went into their promo. But, oh, the two of them were just as boring as batshit. And it was like, the most two unenthusiastic people promoting this whiz bang product.
Have a cup of coffee before you do it, huh?
Oh, geez, like, oh, God, I just wanted to go to sleep. Yeah. It's like, geez, have some more excitement in your voice, but I know they were reading a rehearsed script and it was all in real time. So they had to shoot this one long take in real time. So I know they couldn't make any mistakes. And maybe it was the 10th take they did to get it right or something, you know, and but still, you got to be enthusiastic about your own product, for God's sake.
Ugh. Yeah. I mean, this is, basically this is just Google Glass you wear in your shirt. That's how I see it.
Yep. Oh God, we got to talk about the bloody Vision Pro. Don't we?
I don't have to. No.
No, you don't have to. Anyway, I did make the prediction on Twitter that it would not be a thing in public. It would totally not be a thing. And there's quite a lot of people who agree, and there's other people who said dumbest take ever.
You like the guy wearing it on the subway and stuff like
that?
Yeah, the wearing it on the subway and stuff like that.
It will not be a thing. No.
I don't think not in its current incarnation. I don't think so. What it says to me is that this person should be pickpocketed because they have $3,500.
Right, because they got a $4,000 thing on their head.
Yeah.
Right. Just grab it and run, and they'll be so shocked. And they won't be in the real world, so it'll take them 30 seconds to reacclimatize to the before they can chase you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, as you know, I am an early adopter of a particular head-worn system, and it was not greeted with interest by the general public.
What was the name? You were a glass hole.
I was a glass hole.
You were one of the glass holes. Yeah.
I was. Yeah.
And how long did that novelty take to wear off? A week?
A couple of weeks? Here's the thing. So this AI pin, right? I actually ended up buying something that was kind of like it, but it was...
There's another thing like it?
Was another thing like it. Yeah, it was the narrative pin. You remember me talking about that?
Narrative pin? No.
Yeah, it was a Belgian company, and basically all it was is it would just take these wide angle shots of like your day, so you would just have like a visual reminder, and you could like scroll through, so it would just be taking like basically time lapse shots while pinned to your shirt, so you could just be like, yeah, who did I talk to at that cocktail party?
Right.
You know, like at 7 p.m. on a Friday. Oh, that person, I remember that. And you know, like having these visual reminders because we just have so much data that we process and our brain downsamples it. And I actually, that was probably my favorite. Like Google Glass is Google Glass, right? It was a widely known to be a failure, fine, whatever. But like the thing that I liked about it was the capturing of like my day. Like that, it wasn't on a regular basis. I had to sort of tap the button, but like
having so it's not taking a photo every second or something. You have to tap it.
The narrative pin did take it every... it was settable, you know, every 30 seconds.
Oh, right. Okay. So every 10 seconds or something. So would it just take a photo? Would it? It wouldn't just voice record photo. Anything? It wouldn't record?
You could record a video, but it was like terrible quality.
It was a really
wide angle. It was basically like having a doorbell camera pinned to your shirt. Right. Like that level of quality and lighting and the wide angle nature too, because you want to capture a lot of stuff. I really liked it. I mean, like,
it couldn't record audio. It was just...
It could record audio. No, it could.
Okay, right.
It could, but it didn't because of the power, right? I mean, all day long.
Of course, it's all about power consumption, and that's why the camera in its crap because, you know, there's only so much power you can whack into something the size of...
Right, much like how on the Vision Pro, like, the thing is you need a battery pack that's,
you need an external battery pack, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's just so much power still. Like, over time, it's going to get better and better.
Sure.
It might... This AI pin, other things like it, probably become more... reasonable, maybe not socially acceptable, but from a technological perspective, like we're already there for a lot of this stuff. Like this AI pin is very, I mean, possible from a, you know, capability. Like I think it's probably leaning on your phone, you know, even though it probably has some localized processing I'm sure it's also talking to your phone and that sort of thing. So,
yeah. Well, if somebody, like, I think I said this, like, if somebody came up to me wearing one of these Google Vision Pros or something, I would not.
Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah. Apple Vision Pro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're all the same, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. same evil. If somebody walked up to me and tried to talk to me wearing one of those, I just refused. No, take the stupid shit off and then we'll talk, right? Otherwise, piss off, you know? It's like, no, I just can't imagine.
It's very obvious. You know? They kind of went the other direction, right? It's still, it's nicely designed. It's, I'm sure, high quality. I mean, it's high quality chipsets in there, whatever, but like, they were not trying to be subtle about it.
No. like the tech in it is apparently really good. Like, it's one of the best VR AR solutions out there. It's quite awesome. But
yeah, it's basically iPhone engineers making a headset. Yeah. Like, there's lots of camera processing, really good chipset in there. Like,
it's got like 9 cameras or something. It's got like a 16, is it? I think it's some ridiculous number like that.
Yeah, it's
just insane. And they don't actually sell it as VR goggles. They sell it as a spatial computing solution.
So that's
technically what it is, spatial computing. You know, so you can have multiple monitors and you ride it in front of you anywhere and you can move them around. It's like,
you know what it is to me, Dave? It's a literal pain in the neck. That's what it is.
Yeah, right. I've seen all the memes of all these huge necked people.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, the memes are great. You don't see the memes anymore because you're not on Twitter. Dude, get back on X.
Yeah.
That's where all the action is.
I think if I'm getting on X, I'll probably do the more traditional version of that.
Which is
a nice flowy weekend and touch my shoulder, man. I'm on X.
Oh,
ecstasy.
Boy.
I was talking about ecstasy, Dave. I was going to take ecstasy. Right. MDMA. That was my joke. Just for the explainer out there. Yeah. Probably more likely at this point.
Anyway, like bloody Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah.
Anyway, some people liked my take, and other people I got quite a few Apple fanboys out there attack me, you know, as to be expected. So, yep. Yeah, well.
Well, you know, it's like how, imagine what you were feeling when I was telling you about a smart home type thing. Like, it doesn't really impact you, and yet you're still kind of like, why are you doing this? Like, I kind of think I'd probably feel similar about the Vision Pro. Like, I'm sure it's going to have an impact just because things that Apple do have an impact, fine, whatever,
right? Of course,
but it's not gonna have an impact for me.
No, exactly.
You're right.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not gonna change society. It's not gonna change
change society. I'm sure there will be some impact, but it's probably not gonna change me.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have 5 different monitors all in front of you anywhere you want.
I already do. I mean, like,
I've got 3. Yeah.
I already get yelled at when I, like, you know, I'm on a laptop or a phone outside of my office. Like, I don't think I'm going to be allowed to bring a headset into the living room.
No.
So, like, why not?
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, like, much like people always in history say, like, why would I possibly need more than 640K of memory? Maybe I'll eat crow on that one later. And, like, maybe I need a lot of displays, but kind of the more I think about it and my own technological stuff, I'd probably need fewer monitors, not more. So
my spidey sense tells me it's horses for courses again. If you want your 3 or 5 displays, you set up your 3 or 5 displays and have an optimum solution, and not just do it anywhere. Like, I'm sitting on the crapper and I'm like, I've still got my 5 displays and I'm moving them around. Like, come on, no, just Yep.
Maybe you can go for a walk while you do it. I guess that would maybe get some more exercise. I guess maybe that's good.
No, head down, bum up in an optimized solution environment with your 5 setup monitors properly, real monitors, and then when you're super productive in that space, and then when you can finish earlier, and then you've got time for your walk. Go and touch grass, right? And you don't have to take any tech with you.
Yeah, touch grass.
You'll have a happier life than just, I'm going to have a suboptimal solution, but I've got my 5 monitors everywhere I go. Who the hell cares? Like, no.
Yeah.
No, fail.
Okay. Well, turns out we're not going to be tech bloggers.
Right. Okay. I won't be getting an Apple sponsorship anytime soon.
Yeah, you probably not. Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. It would be fun to do a teardown on one of those things. I'm sure the hardware is gorgeous.
Someone's already, I think iFixit has already done a teardown.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. I'll see if I can find it, link it in, all the usual. Yeah.
That's why it costs, you know, $3,500 or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the metal machining alone is just like, ooh, yeah, that's nice.
Oh, boy.
Actually, I think I saw Apple released a factory video that kind of was a throwback to like the remember when Valve did that for the controller?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, spending production, like having a production company go and film in a factory, that's always money well spent. So
yes, totally agree.
Kudos to them on that one.
That's marketing money well spent. Totally agree. Yep. And all the PCB factories are doing that now.
Scotty started a cottage industry for himself there, which is great because I will watch that every single time he films something. I'm just like, yes,
but
please, I want to see more automation.
Every other YouTuber, come and visit. You can tour the factory and shoot video. They've offered it to every blogger I know. So
got it.
Yeah. Which is smart. Absolutely smart marketing. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I want to see inside a factory.
Yeah. No, fantastic. So
factories. That's where you're going.
I'll try and get off my ass this year and do a couple of factory tours. What do you think?
Do it. I think you should. Yep. Give me, if you need a production assistant, just send me a ticket. No.
Right. Send me a ticket and you'll come on.
It's very low cost.
I mean, you've got a family now. You can't just pack up and leave willy-nilly, dude.
Yeah, I know. I am likely going to Embedded World this year. It was not for certain.
And
it's still
where's that?
Certain team,
Germany?
But that is the one in Germany, in Nuremberg, in April 9th to the 11th.
Right.
So I'll be at that. Probably some of the events around there. So if you're there, please hit me up.
Right.
This year, there's also a new Embedded World, the production company that does it in Germany. They're going to have a U.S. version, which I'm excited about. That's the first year of that. That's going to be in Austin in October. And I will try and go to that, too. I'm not sure. Like, the one in Germany is just always big and lots of people are there and whatever. The one in Austin, I'm not sure about, but I think there's a bunch of chip companies there. So like Scilabs is there, NXP is there, Samsung's there. Like, probably will at least have a lot of local folks, and Austin's a fun town.
Cool bananas.
There. Yeah.
So. I'm probably going to the EV show tomorrow.
Woo! Ooh, that'll be fun. Yeah, bring your camera.
Yeah. I did that last year. It was good fun. So I might I might turn up and I might as well take the camera and shoot something.
I might be buying an EV soon. We should talk about this on future shows. Yeah, there's more kids, so I might have some questions.
What sort of EV? Well,
I said next show, Dave.
Next show. Oh, okay. You're
already like an hour and 7 minutes.
We're way over. Okay, next show. Yeah. All right, I was all excited.
And you'll be at the show. You'll go to the show.
I will have gone to the show. I would have seen the latest EVs. I'll be able to shoot you.
Although they'll be different named sometimes. Although I've been seeing Ionics around here finally.
Right.
So they finally
came
to the States. Yep. Ionic 5s. Yeah, I've seen a bunch here.
Yep.
Yeah, look nice.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
No worries.
Next time.
Catch you next time.
See ya.